Hi, and welcome to Sustainability Bites, the podcast supported by Swiss Alarm Partners. I'm Jack Templeton, and I'll be your host for today. Decades after Stonewall riots, years after the passing of Equal Marriage Acts, and leaps forward entering HIV/AIDS, we're once again seeing a rise in discrimination against the queer community. Looking at the EU's own report on breaking barriers, we know that sport is not often a safe place for all. With statistics showing that 90% of people consider homophobia and particularly transphobia a problem in sport, 82% having witnessed homo or transphobic language in sport in the last 12 months, and a staggering fifth of all queer people refraining from participating in sport due to their sexual orientation or gender identity. It's safe to say that we're not in the best place right now, particularly for the trans community, where discrimination is often higher. To talk about all of this and more, I'm grateful and happy to welcome Flaminia Marchetti to the podcast. Hi Flaminia. To get us started, would you like to give our audience an introduction to yourself and your background with ISCA?
Hi, thank you for having me, first of all. I'm Flaminia, I'm 26. I'm currently a youth officer at ISCA, and my focus is on membership and fundraising. ISCA is the acronym of International Sport and Culture Association, and it's a no-profit umbrella organization that empowers physical activity stakeholders, starting from our member organizations, and tries to get more people active and enjoy their human right to move. I like talking about queer rights and sustainability, and I would say those are my two main focuses. And I, since the beginning of March, I've contributed to Report Out as an events officer on the side. And Report Out is a human rights research organization that documents the lived experiences of sexual and gender minorities and advocates for their right and raises awareness for about the challenges and issues that queer people face every day. So shout out to Report Out. Good job. I love sports and active lifestyle, and that's why I think that I was looking for a way to put together queer rights, raising awareness about queer rights and physical activity, because I think those are two topics that are very close to my heart.
Thanks so much for that. And as I touched on in the introduction, there's some really staggering statistics out there regarding queer participation and experiences in sport. Given your breadth of experience and background, I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts on why this is still such an issue in 2024.
I think it's still very important to talk about it in 2024 because we are far from done with the fight, let's say, in the revolution. We have the elections coming in June, and a lot of politicians are kind of weaponizing queer rights. And although they're still using the negative language, derogatory language, and they're still using an aggressive language towards queer people and the queer community. And especially because the grassroots sports sector is the sector that involves the greatest number of youth, I think that we need to talk about this, and we need to talk about queer rights in sports, because sports is the crucial element that is kind of missing in the conversation. It's not taken into account very much. Finding resources is very hard. Finding activists is very hard. And I think that it's something that we need to kind of find a way to bridge the gap between the discourse on and the policies and the politics surrounding them. So I truly think that we should use sport as a tool to implement the rights that every citizen should be granted, and that, unfortunately, from the statistics, from what we see every day, it's kind of missing somehow, because discrimination is still a big issue.
I think just to pull back a little bit and go to the upcoming EU elections, which I think is on a lot of people's minds right now because of the significance of them and the likely change in the structure of the parliament. What do you think is necessary in the next term and from upcoming MEPs, for example, you know, are there policies or actions that you'd like to see that could contribute to greater resources for this grassroots sport community or connecting stakeholders at that level?
I think addressing homophobia and transphobia in sports is essential for promoting both physical and mental health and the general well-being of queer athletes, as well as everyone else's in the end. So by creating an inclusive and affirming environment and implementing anti-discrimination policies and laws and providing education for everyone who is involved in the sector, so coaches, trainers, athletes, but as well as like the parents of the athletes, basically. So everyone that is involved in the in that sector, to make sure that we train them on queer issues and to ultimately foster allyship that can help mitigate the negative impacts of the discrimination of queer communities and everyone else's in physical and mental health in sports. I think we have seen that in Europe, the hate towards minorities in general is growing instead of becoming less, of decreasing. Everyone knows about LGBTI free zones in Poland. And so these kind of issues don't only hit sports. They hit every single aspect of the queer community's life. And I think that the European Union, on the one hand, is very hands-on in trying to fight discriminations, but at the same time, they could do better, you know. I know that the EU has pledged to tackle the barriers that continue to prevent individuals from accessing and participating in physical activity and sports. And I know that the Fundamental Rights Agency, based in Vienna, is expected to publish an LGBTIQ survey and their key findings in the next couple of months, I think in May. And that could be used as a blueprint for future policies and suggestions and to make some change. But at the same time, there is an EU strategy, the EU strategy 2020-2025, that is far from being done. The main aims of it are to tackle discrimination against queer people by enforcing and improving legal protection, promoting inclusion and diversity in the workplace, and combating inequality in education, health, culture, and sport. At the same time, the strategy tries to ensure queer people's safety, but the numbers show quite the opposite in the end. So I'm guessing the change is there, but it's very, very slow. And I think in the next term, it should be a bit faster, especially with everything that is going around in the world. And also that the MEPs should voice more loudly whether or not they believe in queer rights. Not that just a token or a woke gesture, but because they are actually informed and educated themselves and are actually interested in it. Because, I mean, if politicians are the first ones that somehow use queer rights as a tool to get where they are, then they should ensure that when they pledge something, then they actually respect it. Because in the left wing, and I think the center right as well, as actually many MEPs have actually pledged before the ballot that they would advance queer rights. But, you know, one thing is saying that you're going to do something, and one thing is actually taking action. And I would like to see that. I would like it to be easier for everyone to access resources, to know what they're talking about, and to make sure that when something is celebrated, it is celebrated because of the will to celebrate it and not simply because, I mean, everyone expects you to celebrate it, you know?
In some other research, it's been seen that queer adults also have feelings of missing out on sport and exercise in their youth, which later impacts their adulthood experiences. And you mentioned the importance of involving not just those taking part in sports, but also those around them. So parents, coaches, other stakeholders. I was wondering if you could speak to maybe the value of having queer role models for the community, for sport and just in general.
Yeah, I think that, promoting visibility and ensuring representation is very important for everyone, because it's easy. You see someone doing what you want to do, someone that looks like you, then you think that you're able to do it as well. So I think that one key action that everyone should do, organizations first, is to promote the visibility and the representation of queer individuals in sports by featuring queer athletes, coaches, and role models in general, not just by seeing them, by just making them do their sport or whatever activity they're doing, but by making sure that they're kind of somehow this is going to sound very bad, but like the promotional material of the organization itself. So they ensure that the organization shows that they are doing the work to create an inclusive environment. So visibility helps to challenge the stereotypes, to break down barriers, and to create more inclusive and sporting environments and events. For instance, one thing that I really loved with working with ISCA and with your organization was that when we met in Brussels, we kind of had that round table that offered us the chance to talk to people that were to stakeholders in the sector of course, food and physical activity. But it was very good because we had the opportunity to see what they think and what we think from the different sides. And I think that seeing something similar would be interesting from a queer point of view, so including queer athletes or activists, but as well as the family members, the coaches, everyone that is involved that does not necessarily belong to the queer community but is an ally, to show everyone that nothing is going to happen if you actually voice your need or you leave space for other people to show what they can do and to represent an entire community. Because when you are representing something, I mean, it has a very strong impact, both positive and negative, because of course, when in a negative way, let's say, if you are a queer athlete, you will represent the entire queer community. So if you fail, the entire queer community fails. But at the same time, what if you don't fail? What if you actually set the example and young people kind of see in you what some sort of hero or heroine. And I think it's also important to involve them in the policy making. So give space to them to express their concerns, to say what their challenges are, to make sure that the policies reply and give an answer to those challenges and fight those challenges. Because you cannot somehow treat them as children, you know? You cannot tell a queer person this is what you need if you don't know actually what a queer person needs. So maybe you should ask first. At the same time, it's very important to provide supportive resources and services, and those resources and services come from listening to them and making them a part of the organization and giving them the agency to show the world what they are capable of and what they need.
Yeah, exactly. And the product you mentioned there, brought together stakeholders for a healthier lifestyle sort of event. And both ISCA and Switzerland Partners are well-versed in awareness campaigns and bringing stakeholders together. By getting the people impacted a seat at the actual table, you get to the source of the issue and you can actually hear the solutions that would be most effective for them and the solutions that they actually would use and would need. Going one step further, I'd be curious to hear how you think organizations and people can be more active and impactful allies without just pinkwashing.
That's a very good question. I think the Healthy Lifestyle for All project is actually a very useful example, because one of the pillars is to provide easier access to sport, physical activity and healthy diets, and with special focus on inclusion and non-discrimination to reach every disadvantaged group. And I think that a good starting point for organizations to be good allies without rainbow and pinkwashing is to make sure that they are actually implementing anti-discriminatory policies and promote gender inclusive facilities and policies to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity and expression as well. And for instance, in network organizations such as ISCA, for example, it would be also to make sure that the members kind of pledge to that kind of policies so that they are implementing those policies. On the other hand, it would be very useful to, first of all, get educated, but also to provide a queer inclusion training so that all the staff, coaches, athletes, and volunteers know what they're talking about, what they're fighting, and that they are aware of the issue, what the issues are. Trainings could cover the most basic things, like simply why pronouns are important, or foster inclusive language and behavior inside the building itself, so that then it gets kind of natural to implementing it even in their own projects, you know. And then of course promote visibility and representation. Make sure that when you are participating in a project, you're doing it not simply because you know that that project is good for your image, but also because it is good for everyone. And then, of course, provide supportive resources and services to everyone in the staff. And could also be simply acknowledging that gender minorities exist, that sexual minorities exist, and making sure that they are welcomed in the organization, not simply because it is useful to have one person that belongs to a gender or sexual minority into the staff, but because they actually have something to bring, so that they can then, you can leave them the space to open the conversation, you know, and make sure that you're not talking for them, but that they can talk for themselves.
I think that really nicely leads us into our next question, actually. Working in the sports sector, have you seen any standout examples of countries or sport organizations that have been particularly successful in promoting inclusivity for queer individuals or other minorities in sport?
Yes, absolutely. There are so many, actually. First of all, I mean, the ILGA map, the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association, provides a map of the best countries for queer people to live in. And I think Malta, Belgium, Luxembourg, and most of Northern Europe is on top. And I believe that those are also the best countries for queer athletes at this point. But there are some very interesting examples all over Europe. There is a project that is funded by the EU that is called Outsport Project that involves Italy, UK, Germany, Austria, and Hungary, and that gives an insight in the state of the arts of the impacts of discrimination on queer people. And that later produced a toolkit to support sport educators in developing more inclusive environments. And then during the EU Week of Sport 2023, they promoted the Raising Together campaign that basically was raising awareness and was kind of sharing the toolkit with the world to make sure that everyone has access to the tools to create more inclusive environments for queer athletes. At the same time, there is this organization that is, I think, one of the most important in Europe for queer sport, and it's the European Gay and Lesbian Sport Federation. That is a sport community that promotes the fight against discrimination in sport, that stimulates the integration and emancipation of queer athletes, and enables to and support the coming out of queer athletes. That is a very important thing, and support the founding of queer groups. And they have a very interesting campaign that is open to anyone, and it's called Eurogames. And it's, I think, an annual or biannual event that is open to everyone who wishes to participate, regardless of sex, gender, age, race, gender identity, sexual orientation. So it is the most inclusive environment possible. At the same time, there are very bad things that are still going on, I would say so, because, for example, in France, transgender people have only had the possibility to participate in sports at a national level, I think in the last couple of years. And there is a rugby player that has been always very vocal about it. But the thing is that, for example, in France, they're allowed to, transgender people are allowed to participate in competitive sports, but the 2024 Olympics don't allow them. So it's kind of a big conversation to have, because even if we do the work at the European level, at the global level, it might not be impactful still. And it would be very nice, for example, to have the possibility to see transgender people participating in competitive sport in the Olympics. Also, because at some point in 2021, they could. So I don't know if this is something that has to do with specific sports, but it is a very interesting conversation to have, because it kind of makes you think of the actual state of the arts of the issue. But on the brighter side, there are a lot of organizations that are doing the work, and they're doing their best to improve the sport environment. There's also the ENGSO, ENGSO, European Sport NGO, I don't know how to pronounce it, that has a project that promotes equality in sport, and that has recently published a report that states that by collaborating basically with ILGA, with Outsport Group and Sport Scotland, among others, they have actually provided a lot of input that could be helpful for the future development of queer sport.
If I can actually quickly just jump in just now, I wonder if I could ask you if you think on the whole things are going in the right direction, or if we're actually going backwards. I'm aware this maybe needs a lot of nuance, but I think I'd be interested to hear your perspective on that.
I think we are making progress, slower than expected. It is something that is happening very much on the grassroots level, and not in institutional at the institutional level. I think that especially our generation, we are kind of, I'm hoping we are, I don't know if I live in a bell jar, but I do realize that there is still discrimination and I see it, but I do see that my generation and the following ones are making, we are kind of more open and we take a lot of things for granted, like gender identity and sexual orientation for us is not an issue anymore. It's easy for us to talk about it and we're more accepting. I'm sure there are exceptions to it, you know, in general. But at the institutional level, I think we are far from being in a good place, honestly. Especially politicians, they are a bit, they use the wrong kind of language. And I don't know if they are honestly very open to the change. I feel like that sometimes they do stuff just because otherwise they would get cancelled, basically, and they would get a backlash. But overall, yeah, I would hope so. I'm an optimist. The situation could be better, but it could also be very much worse.
You mentioned the ILG rainbow map, which I really, really love and have shown to several colleagues, actually. But from as we can see, the huge disparities across the EU and the European region at large. And so this means that queer people have lower access to safe places where they can exercise or play sports compared to the rest of the population. What kind of impacts can you see from this exclusion?
This is actually a very interesting question because I think it impacts both the overall health of the entire community and of the individuals involved, both on the physical level, but also on the mental level. Physically, because of course, if you're discriminated against and if you're not feel welcomed, then you will be less motivated and engaged in doing sports and joining clubs. And there are a lot of people that end up dropping out entirely, which then leads to a deterioration in health in general. And that it is very much related to mental health, because of course, if you don't feel welcomed, then negative health behaviors might be, you know, put in place, substance abuse or eating disorders, up to self-harm. And from, you know, you feel kind of an anxiety and a stress that could be related to minority stress, but also to performance anxiety. Because as we were saying before, if you are the only queer person in the room, then you represent the entire community, even if you don't want to. So that brings a lot of stress and anxiety and pressure. And that could lead to isolation and alienation, to depression, to self-hatred, and to ultimately impact your entire sense of identity. Because if you self-loathe, then you might not develop your identity to the most of your potential. Especially for young people, being discriminated against means that you might internalize homophobia, transphobia, and not be able to fully embrace and celebrate who you are. I think a very important part of the visibility and giving representation to individuals is that you kind of fight the ghettoization of that community. Because if you are not allowed to, or no, let's say it differently. If you're only allowed to join queer clubs, of course you will enjoy your right to move and your right to a healthy lifestyle, but you're not enjoying your full right to live in the community, in the entire community. Of course, you're welcome to join the queer club if you feel that that's the right thing for you, but that should not be the only option. So making sure that we are representing queer people in heteronormative settings makes the heteronormative settings less heteronormative and ensures that everyone is accepted and welcomed in every single place, basically.
I think, as always, it's a really nice way for us to round out this podcast with some recommendations or resources that you might have for listeners who want to dive deeper into this. Are there any initiatives or actions as well that our listeners could join or check out in their own time?
I think there is an important paradox to take into account here, because the sports sector is the biggest sector for young people to participate in the EU. But there's a bit of a paradox because it is impossible to find queer resources in sport. It is kind of a niche in the niche, I would say. But there are some interesting podcasts that I would suggest. One is for French speakers or people at least that understand French, and it's called Voix Queer. And it's a podcast where people share their experiences and life stories, and a lot of queer athletes have participated. And then there is another one that is called LGBTQ Sports Podcast, and that's for English speakers. And I think that's a very useful and innovative one, because on the one hand, it highlights queer experiences in the sports sector at the global level. It shares a lot of tools for coaches and athletes, but also collects episodes from other podcasts. So it's kind of a resource inside a resource. And for us lazy people, great. At the same, on the other hand, it would be useful to join the campaigns, Euro Games, for example, or to make sure that you participate in the petitions and in the surveys that ILGA promotes. And then there are some activists that I really like. One of them is she's an American player, and her name is Megan, and I'm going to butcher the surname probably, but it's Rapinoe. She was one of the first football players that came out, and that has always been very vocal about queer rights in football, of course. And then the French rugby player I was telling you about earlier, Alexia Serini, who transitioned at the age of 25 and was very vocal about trans rights in sports. And then finally, there is a book, and it's called Sport Identity and Inclusion in Europe, The Experiences of LGBTQ People in Sport. And that actually was the easiest resource to find. It is not a light read, but it is very interesting because it's a collection of essays that analyzes the shared experiences of queer athletes across sports and across activities. And I think that's very, it gives you an insight that if so many people have the same issues, then maybe there are some, you know, steps that should be taken about those issues and challenges.
Yeah, I think it's clear there's a long way to go before we really reach true equality. I'll be sure to check out those resources, and we'll link them in the show notes as well. Thank you so much for your time today, Flaminia. And we hope to have you on again soon. Thank you all for listening as well, and we'll see you next time on Sustainability Bites. I think it's safe to say there's still a long way to go towards equality, but it's nice to see and hear so much work is still happening. I'll definitely check out those resources as well, especially the podcasts. I think those will be super interesting to listen to. Thanks so much, Flaminia, for your time today. I'm sure people at home find it very insightful, eye-opening even. Thanks to you as well for listening, and we hope to see you again on Sustainability Bites.